Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
This episode is brought to you by Buyers Agency Australia.
I was speaking to him, I think the next day, and he said, we're talking about this school, and I said, yeah, I'm all done. He goes, okay, tomorrow you're on the sites. So from full time. So
this is Property Investory, where we talk to successful property investors to find out more about their stories, mindset, and strategies. I'm Tyrone Shum, and in this episode, we're speaking with Fayyad Fayyad, co-founder of property development agency Ellison Property. Fayyad's experience with construction began when his dad pulled him into the workforce after his exams finished. Learn how he climbed his way through the ranks of the company to develop large-scale projects with over 15,000 units. After years of experience working as part of his father's company, Fayyad and his brother took the plunge and launched their own business last year.
The way I approach my business is that I work for my business and I work for my staff. So what that means is that I don't have a typical day, a day in the life, or I don't have a typical, apart from my set meetings that I have with various different team leaders, my day usually consists of attending to the business's needs. So whether that might be attending a construction site to make some decisions out there or give some guidance or jumping into a sales meeting to help advice or just I guess roaming around the office and making sure everything's okay and dealing with any questions, you know. So I'm very responsive to emails, I guess, and very I don't like to have so much of a structured day apart from my timings, but what my days consist of is really attending to business and staff needs.
Being co-founders, how did Fayyad and his brother split the responsibilities of the business?
Currently, my title in the business is co-founder. So we haven't at the moment decided on having typical structure, my brother and I. So we've decided at the moment, it may change in the future, but at the moment we'd like to be dual founders, and then we have a general manager that oversees the operations, and then with him there is the team leaders, whether that be in planning, sales, marketing. So it's a very flat structure. We don't like to be very hierarchical, so it's very just whatever you need to get the job done, that's all we need. It's not about setting up a myriad of reporting lines. It's just let's get the job done. So that lends itself to us, Ramon and I, to be co-founders, which is more practical, I guess, rather than a typical CEO sort of arrangement.
Absolutely. I mean, you guys have had a very interesting background in your history, working in property development for, you know, pretty much your whole life, and you've grown up in that family of it. But let's jump back then to talk a little bit about yourself personally and get to know you. Maybe let's firstly start off with where did you grow up firstly?
So I grew up in the western suburbs of Sydney. So where we are now, I grew up, I guess, 5 kilometres down the road. So, and just maintain the area. So yeah, that's right. So I haven't gone far from where I've grown up.
What's it like to actually grow up, you know, I guess go to school in the area and then also work in the area now that, you know, you're only 5 kilometers for where you grew up in there? What was it like for you to go to school and stuff like that?
The family has a lot of background in the area. So my uncles went to school in the area. My mother went to school in the area. So it's very, I guess, it is home, but it actually felt like, it didn't felt that I was brought up in here. It was the family was brought up in here. So the schools I went to, my uncles went to it, both primary school and high school. So there was kind of like a, I guess the feeling was warm before I actually went into the school. So it was more, I guess, what it's like. It's very, I guess, proud. It's a very proud feeling, what it was like to grow up in this area and to be in this area at the moment. So still there doing business. The way I drive to work is the way my mum used to drop me off to go to school. So it's kind of, it's same road, same, just a bit further down the road. So it's kind of takes me back memory lane every morning on the way to work.
So mum would drive you to school. You'd go down that same path, which you drive to work as well. What were some of the fond memories that you had back in school? Say, you know, primary school growing up.
There's not much I remember at primary school, I guess. I do definitely remember my first day and in the tail end of primary school, getting into year 4, 5, and 6. I just remember it being a very, it was a very tiny school. So I think it was, there's about 170, 180 students in the school. So it was very close knit. I remember one of my fondest memories of high school, primary school was the weekend sport, I guess. So I wasn't too I was in education, but the highlight for me was the weekend sport, which I played rugby league from the ages of age of 4.5 all the way up to 13. So that was my whole primary school years.
Tell me a little bit more about the rugby side and the sporting side. What drew you into doing those activities?
I think rugby league, I was very, being in the western suburbs of Sydney, I used to follow, and I still do follow, the Parramatta Eels. And I think even in the early days, maybe even before starting rugby league, I seen that watching it actually meant that it was the thing to do. So what I mean is that I used to watch it on the weekend or like on a Friday night, and then it'd be something that I want to aspire to do. So naturally being involved and supporting a team and then actually playing for your own team on the weekend, it kind of just, it rubbed off on each other. So it was that, like, my heroes of the day were on Channel 9 on a Friday night on the football field. So when I had the opportunity to play for my school, I guess it was just the best, what I wanted to do, apart from other sports as well. So I guess it was my the level of respect or the level of following I had for the professional footballers on the field watching on TV just meant that I had to do that myself. So yeah, just following in heroes' footsteps, I guess.
That's great. So did that love of sport continue on all the way through into high school as well?
Yeah, it did. But I think when you get older, it gets a bit, not so much physical, but it gets a bit more professional. And I guess when I was younger, I was probably the bigger boy in class. So I could just, my size would do the work. But getting older, it had to be a bit more training 3 nights a week and went to a great school, but it was kind of had to choose where my mindset was going. Am I going education or am I going sporting? So because our school was so, so I guess dominant and so disciplined in their sporting that it was very hard to balance both. So coming back from an ethnic background, I guess the best way or the acceptable decision would be go down the education route and leave the sporting for our younger days, I guess.
And I guess going to school as well, did you go to school the same school as your brother as well?
Yeah, we went to the same schools. We were I guess 6 years apart, but we follow the same paths. So I went to Marist High in Parramatta for my high school, just in Westmead there.
Yeah, and what was it like? Because 6 years apart usually it would probably be just when you're finishing high school and then he's just starting high school as well.
Yeah, so I was helped him into kindergarten when I was in year six. So we kind of spent a year together at the same school. Then I moved to high school and then he carried through to primary school. And then in high school, actually, we didn't cross paths. Well, we did. We didn't actually. I finished before he actually started. So
let's say we finished high school. What did you do after that? Did you go out and start working, getting some experience, or did you also go and further education and studies?
So straight after high school, I remember my last HSC exam was on a Thursday. My father actually, I was speaking to him, I think the next day, and he said, we're talking about this school. And I said, yeah, I'm all done. He goes, okay, tomorrow you're on the sites. So from full time. So last exam, I can't remember what that was exactly, but Thursday was my last exam and Saturday I was on the construction site. So if my dad found out I finished on Thursday, I think I'd be there on a Friday. So, and I've been at work since. So.
Gosh, oh, you gotta love your dad.
The next January, I was in. I went to do building studies at Hornsby TAFE, so and did 4 years there. Finished my building course, and that was it for education, formal education, I guess. Yeah.
Fayyad's family has been in the development space for decades. What was it like for him to grow up around that?
I guess it was very. Very aspirational. So my earlier days, even at school, being brought up in a property family, I guess it was very something to look up to and be proud with, be proud about. So I guess it was very easy to be brought up in it in the sense that I was very proud of it. I was very proud. I was very eager to learn from my father, from my uncles. And it was just, I don't know if it was second nature because I grew up on the construction sites. I mean, even my early days in primary school, my weekends was on site, not because of slave labor, but just to help my dad, like just accompany my dad to the sites and play with the sand and just wasn't really working, but just being in the environment actually instilled something that is still with me today. So it kind of, it was being in the family definitely wasn't forced on me. It was, I was supported in the direction that I took.
Having been exposed to the development world from a young age, the work came naturally to Fayyad when he picked up his first tool. But he had still a lot to learn before he could reach the top.
Construction is very, dog eats dog and just very, very, very structural, very, very tough. I guess coming into... I don't know if it's the way I was brought up, but I didn't come in as the owner's son, I guess. So I started on the construction sites as a laborer, sweeping the units, mixing cement for the bricklayers. So and I worked my way through the levels that way. So I didn't come in from the top for a couple of reasons. I guess it's just not my nature to do that, and to. It's hard to come in and tell people who are more experienced than you to do something that they've done better than you. So it's kind of, it's not very authentic to do that. So I worked my way through the sites from laborer to leading hand to site foreman, project manager, construction manager, and where I am now.
That's amazing. And how long were you working within your family's business as well?
So I started in 99 when I finished school. So full-time from late 99 all the way up to last year, actually, where I was full-time in the family until right now where Ramon and I have established our own development company.
Yeah, and you would have taken a lot of great experiences in over that period of time to be able to establish something that, you know, is yours and now your brother's as well too.
Yeah, correct. There's a lot of lessons. There's a lot of good lessons, hard lessons that come out of that. I guess, how much is that? 20 years, 20 plus years that was, set us up in a good good frame of mind and good good backing to set up something new. So it is new, but it comes with old and tried and tested processes, I guess.
Working on sites wasn't the only thing he did over the years. How did Fayyad prepare to become a business owner himself?
I made a point of dabbling in every section of the business, whether that be in marketing or sales or actually getting in the day-to-day, the nitty-gritty, so that when I did eventually were overseeing all of them, I could speak to the sales manager as in a regard of I've been there, done that sort of thing, rather than, well, I'm here, the boss, and just give me your reports and report to me and crack the whip and that sort of thing. So I made a conscious effort to not spend just an hour in every department, but actually spend a good portion of up to months in different departments working with the teams to get first-hand experience of the ins and outs of every department, and so that it set me up so that fast forward in the future, it allowed me to speak and earn the respect out of them receiving, whether it be an instruction or guidance from someone that has been with them and been in the trenches with them. So
that is just so key and fundamental, because when people actually understand that you've actually been there, done that, and you can talk their own language as well too, they appreciate and respect it a lot more.
Yeah, that's correct. And I also I acknowledge that I've got people around me who are better at me, better at things than what I would be. So and that's why they're in the business. So let's face it, spending 1 month in a sales team is not going to teach you everything. So it does allow you to set frameworks and guidelines and give a bit of direction. But at the end of the day, when it gets down to the nuts and bolts, you have to rely on people and take advice from people. I'd like to say that I really listen to people and I'm not arrogant in that sense where I know best. So
when Fayyad joined the business over 20 years ago, it was mainly a construction business. So it was natural for him to go into that side of the work.
I started on the construction sites, and my family's business commenced as a construction company, which then evolved into construction and property development. So at the outset, from establishment phase, it was a contract builder. So I think when I started in the company in 99, it was at that stage where the company was more construction and had a little office of development, whereas these days it's flipped the other way around. So I guess coming into the company, property development was just done by, I guess, my dad and my uncles and a few planners and bankers, and that's it. But the other 98% of the company were out on the construction sites. So, and that was that at that time, that's when I did start in the business. So it was kind of natural to be construction. And that's, I guess, being there, that's where I started and spent most of that time. That's probably why I've got that, construction background in me, and I still like to. That's my, I guess, sense of release now, is heading out to a construction site, even if I don't need to attend to anything. I just, rather than going out for a walk outside, I just duck down to the closest construction site and do a few laps through the building there, just as a really just to get a bit of a recharge.
How did the business develop over time?
The construction team stayed as it is, if not grew even larger. It's the fact that the property then team grew. So in terms of where myself and my father would spend time, instead of being 90% construction site and then I guess, from 4 to 6 at night, looking at how the plans are going at council. And then it became more that that became more of our 9 to 5. And so we had to engage and employ construction managers and project directors to oversee the construction business, because we got that pretty much down pat. And then we, so I guess it didn't evolve into a development from construction to development. It actually, construction remained and development just kind of like, it grew another wing, I guess, in the business. It expanded, yeah, rather than evolve, it just expanded. I mean, we probably had 98% of, at early days, 98% of the staff were on construction sites, 2% in office, and now it's probably 60-40.
Fayard explains the difference between property construction and property development.
So the developer would buy the site, it would get the approvals, then pass the plans over to the construction side of the business, which is the builder, build the building. The builder would hand it back to the developer, then do what they want to do with it, either sell it, live in it, rent it out. Or, so I guess the best way to explain it would be if you were to engage a handyman at your house, you are the developer and the handyman is the builder. So you actually have the final say, but you rely on the builder's expertise to actually get the job done.
So for Ellison Property at this point in time, where do you lie at the moment, or where does this company lie? Is it more property development and or still a bit of construction?
We like to see it as a property development agency rather than a typical property developer that owns the land and does everything from planning to sales. And as a landowner, we, Ramon and I, have consciously set up the business so that it's like an agency model. And with that, it's set up now. It currently provides the property development services for family assets, whether that be construction or office buildings that the family owns. And so in our past, we've always been approached by other landowners that don't quite know how to get buildings up and running, whether that be from a planning to a construction. And we'd always have to turn them back, because working for yourself and then working for someone else, there's different dynamics that it probably, there's a lot more reporting when you do when you're working for a third party rather than for yourself. So,
do you find yourself stressed out not knowing how or where to find the best property deals, or what the best strategy is to build a wealth-generating portfolio? Well, Dragan Dominski can help you while you save time and money. With about 2 decades of experience as an investor and expert buyer's agent, he finds positively geared properties with development potentials and secures and negotiates off-market deals for his clients. Now, he's offering you a no-obligation 45-minute strategy call to get you started. Just simply text the code BAA with your name and email address to 0405 105 074 to get your no-obligation free 45-minute strategy call. Fayard built Ellison Property from the ground up with his brother Ramon with great success, but it hasn't always been a smooth ride. He tells us about one of the mistakes he made in collaboration with the Hilton Hotel Group.
Yeah, so I was on holiday with a few friends in the Gold Coast, and I mean, it's not our backyard, but we were there for a holiday, and the Hilton Hotel was getting built at that time. And it was, it had an arrangement where you could buy the apartment and then put them back in the hotel pool. So it kind of like, you buy it, but then you offer it back to the hotel, and then they run it. And it's still running now. But I guess it was like an impulse buy. I didn't do my homework, put down the deposit, paid like a little bit of money for it. And right now, probably 10 years later, it's probably worth worth the same as it is now than when I paid for it. It took a backward step and then came back in. And I think that was really, it's not a good indication or a good, it's not a good reflection on the property space in general. This was a, it was bought in the middle of, it was a boom. It was like a holiday hotel branded. It was kind of a bit pumped up a bit. So that's why, that was my worst, and it's still, today it's still worth the same value. So in terms of being worst in property, it means you're kind of staying where you are.
Yeah. You lost opportunity costs there.
Yeah. So it's kind of, if that's the worst in property, property can't be that too bad. So.
What was it that attracted you? Was it because it potentially they could have gone up there and used it in your spare time, or is it because it was a branded type of apartment there that you could rent out? What was the attraction to purchasing that investment?
Look, I think it was a bit of both. It was definitely at the time I was buying a few apartments in different areas, like one in Sydney CBD and one in the Northern Beaches. And it was kind of at that time where I was looking and looking outside of our 9-to-5 business, I guess, and just investing in different aspirational, I guess, apartments. The one in Queensland was, what made me do it. I have a passion of getting into hotels. I still do now. And I think being part of a hotel sort of environment, and it was an opportunity to be there but not be there, so just get a flavor of it. So buy an apartment and you're actually part of a hotel. Like, so it's kind of like you're thinking that maybe this is my way of getting into hotels. I do have in the back of my mind, I've always loved to get into hotels and eventually own hotels, either through Ellison or through the family. That's a dream vision of mine, to get into hotels. And I saw this as an opportunity to one, have a place for holidays, when I wanted to, and also be part of a hotel environment, hotel business, I guess.
So you've had a lot of experience and built, you know, thousands and thousands of apartments across. Actually, has it been mostly in New South Wales that you've built apartments in the past, or has it actually gone into other states as well?
We've invested interstate. We've been partners with other developers, but we let them do the role because it's their backyard. But our 9-to-5 and where we get our hands dirty is in Sydney, I guess.
So over that period of time, you've obviously done a lot of apartments, built a lot of apartments. Was there actually an opportunity to potentially convert one of them into maybe a hotel?
Yeah, I mean, structurally, it's fairly similar. It's just the property, whether it comes down to zoning as well. So we buy a lot in the residential areas. So it doesn't tend to lend itself to hotel builds. But the more we get into CBD, Parramatta CBD, like at the moment we're working on a complex where it's a combination of it's three towers. So two towers are actually residential and one tower is a hotel. So it's been approved. So now we're just looking at ways to pre-sell the apartments, and potentially we're looking at the hotel structure, whether we engage a manager to run it, or do we sell the actual hotel structure to an established hotel operator. So it's funny you mentioned it, because at the moment we're kind of we're there, but I guess what I mean by my vision to be in hotels is to actually be in the operation. So not so much as owning the building and then renting it out to like a Marriott or a Four Seasons. It's actually being that Marriott or being the Four Seasons. So that's where my passion is. So that's a totally different business, I guess. So and it could be another step in the door. The first step was the apartment in the Hilton in Gold Coast, and this one might be constructing the building, and then having as a landlord, and then have a Hilton or someone similar to that being the tenant and operating a hotel out of it.
Wow. It's amazing. You are living very, very close to your dream now, because you are actually constructing one.
Yeah, I can see it. It's on the horizon. But yeah, like I said, it's not some, and that goes back to, I don't like to do things half-heartedly. So if I want to get into hotels, I'd have to really know my stuff and not just be a developer turned into a hotel operator. It's just a totally different ball game, and I don't want to, I guess, stuff it up.
Fayyad's aha moment happened when he was working on his first development, which actually started as an investment property.
I purchased a $500,000 four-bedroom home on a block of land, a typical suburban home, cottage, I guess. So that was in my early days, straight out of, or a few years, a couple of years out of school. So I guess the aha moment there was, I don't want to say how easy it is, but how I guess getting onto the property ladder, how many, definitely wasn't easy, but it was easier than what I thought. Like on the construction sites, I was building for, obviously for the company, but then at the tail end, I'd see people coming in and moving in, and then like I'd think about, I guess, where are all these rich people coming from? So I'd see like three or four of, like at the time they were probably $400,000 apartments, and I didn't know much about property investing at the time and the banks and lending and all that stuff. And I just think people would come here with a $400,000 check, pick up their keys and move into the, and I go, like, how many of these sort of people are there? It can't be that, like I don't know these sort of people. Where are they coming from? It wasn't until I got into it myself, like a few years out from school, where my dad actually, the property I was talking about came up for sale in our street, and my father said, I think you should get into property. You know how to build, and I guess the next natural step is, it's a good way to invest some money. And I said, yeah, Dad, but like, how do I do it? Like, I don't have $500,000. And he goes, what do you mean? And I said, but like, I want to buy it, but how do I get into it? And he goes, no. Here's what you do. You need, at the time, the banks, I think, were lending 90%. So you need a 10% deposit. We happen to know the people, so we kind of structured the deposit until settlement. Got 90% from the bank. And so that whole journey was like, hang on, I could get a $500,000 home with $50,000. And even that $50,000, the way I got it was a little bit of saving, and then talking to the vendor about a structured way to come up with that $50,000 at the time. So I got a little bit of help from Dad and the plan with the vendor, a little bit of savings, come up with the 50. But I guess why it became an aha moment is because it's actually, there's so many resources around that actually want you to invest and help you to invest. So I'd be there sitting, before this time, I'd be sitting there, or I'd be driving past the home, for sale sign, 600,000. That's nice, but how do I get there? Like, I'm going to have to wait till I earn 600,000 or have that much in tax. And how are people doing it daily? Like, where, like, and once I got into that process and then worked out that there was a $50,000 investment, and then the bank come up with the rest, that kind of, it, in my mind, holding me back, or the big question mark in my mind for property development industry, was how widespread is it? How many people can come up with these $300,000 and $400,000 checks and pick? So then going through my experience and then working out, well, hang on, these $300,000 or $400,000 apartments actually really only cost people maybe $30,000, and the rest were relying on banks or other ways of getting funds. And so I kind of like said, well, hang on, this property space, it's actually, it's for everyone then. So experiencing that journey firsthand really was a real standout moment and a real eye opener, and I guess a door opener for the industry in my head, I guess.
Does that mean then you go, wow, instead of just buying one of these properties, I can buy, say, 10 of these properties?
I actually developed that property into a duplex. So it kind of, sat there for a little bit, earned some rent, got a DA on it, went back to the bank, got a bit more money, started building it. Me, background building, I did a bit of it myself. So kind of helped with the costs there. It's my first investment, and it's an investment I still have today.
So I'm assuming that you also spend quite a bit of time as well looking at investing properties, or do you mostly focus on property development at the moment, at this point in time?
A bit of both. So at the moment, we deal with real estate agents in the property development space. So we get offered a lot of development sites for sale. So in those conversations, you actually come across some good investments, whether that be a newly built or completed office tower that's come onto the market. So although we're predominantly property development turning a piece of land into finished apartments for the end user, we do our own investments by the by, I guess, like in the actual process of property development, you get offered opportunities to become a property investor as well.
Growing up around the property construction industry, Fayard learned a lot from his father, who helped him get into the property ladder. But aside from that, who else did he turn to as a mentor?
I'd like to say my late uncle. He was a great mentor in my early days, who passed away 10 years ago now. So it was very inspirational and very, I guess, a life coach, if you'd say, growing up. So he was he was very young, so he was kind of like a big brother sort of model. So he was my mentor. He was in the property business, in the company with my father as well. So for being that little bit younger, closer to my age, and I guess we had similar interests in property and in construction. So he was really, I'd like to say where I am today, kind of like his pathway kind of led me to where I am today, following his path. So, yeah.
The reason why he also inspired you and was like a mentor to you was because he also accomplished what you have, you know, wanted to achieve as well.
Correct. Yeah. From a business sense, I guess he always aspired to build great properties. So he would never skimp on design or quality or finishes. That so from a construction sense, he'd put everything at his buildings, you know. So we'd often have conversations with cost effectiveness or maintaining the budget, but from his sense is that no, this building, I need to build it as if I was living in it, and I want to build it as if it's my home. So I guess it was a good balance between my father and him, was that he was very pushing the boundaries, which was good for the end user. But from a business sense, my father was always there to kind of keep it a little bit balanced. So it was a good blend of two. And my style is more like him in that sense. So he actually, he he allowed me to think the way I think now is that property development and the delivery of construction projects isn't, look, it's the success is based on the profitability of it. But at the end of the day, there is some room to move to make sure that the end product isn't just about spreadsheets and numbers on a page. It's actually putting out a building that's that you're proud of and that your end user could always thank you for, rather than like that they can enjoy living in, rather than just saying, okay, well, thanks for putting a roof over our head and that's it. We'd like them to actually enjoy and be proud of the building that they're in.
Fayard shares the differences between the residential units they've built in the past compared to what they're building for the future.
The nature of our buildings now are very, I guess, mixed use, in that it's they could be like you'd have retail spaces at the bottom, you'd have a little bit of a few levels of office space, and then you have your residential above. So you could kind of live in that whole complex, whether you need to get groceries down at the stores downstairs, work in the upper levels, and then live right at the top of the tower. So, and I guess one thing we want to keep in mind is that we want people, people will, sure, they're looking for the best price at the time, but people are willing to pay that little bit more just to have that best, to live in the best building in the street or the best building in the suburb. So there is that. And then what it finds, it makes your job more, I guess, fun, more interesting to be able to put something up that you're proud of. And then there's also buyers coming on board that are willing to spend that little bit more just to be part of that tower, that story. So, yeah. And it's not just a look, it's the way the whole building operates, I guess. So you can't charge more just because the building looks better. It's the way the whole thing works, you know. So, I mean, I often get asked, I mean, sometimes seriously or as a joke, people ask me, are you an architect or a developer? So I like to think, I'm definitely not an architect, but I like to have that vision, you know. So
Fayard discusses further his mindset and motivation.
I love my documentaries. And I'm big on listening to podcasts. So I guess the one that gets me up and going, I guess, every morning is the I listen to the Gary Vee Audio Experience every morning. And whenever I can, if I'm driving to sites, it's always on in my car. And that really just it breaks things down and just. It just cuts out a lot of, I guess, smokes and mirrors and it just really it makes operating business, I guess, a lot more practical.
Gary's awesome. he's just one of a kind that, you know, I've met him once and just speaking to him, so down to earth and genuine, and he just has that kind of, yeah, inspirational part about him. And when he gets up on stage, man, he gets the crowd fired up.
It's so genuine, so authentic. I've met him a couple of times and face to face, and he's very humble and very interested in what you're doing, rather than just showing that he's interested. He's really interested. I mean,
he reveals the advice which completely changed his mindset and fast-tracked his success.
The best piece of advice I read once is from Richard Branson, where he would explain, and he'd been through it in the past, where that if you're presented with an opportunity, and although you don't have, I guess, all your ducks in order to take on that opportunity, but you want to, it's an opportunity that you want to get involved in, you should just take it and then work out how to work your way through it as you have that opportunity, not to turn it back, because it may never come back to you, the opportunity. So I guess if it's an opportunity that you're looking for and you say, well, I might not be that ready for it, come back to me in a few years' time and I'll when I've built this and I've ticked that box and I've done this course and I've done that, I guess that probably holds you back. If you're getting everything perfect, one, you'll never get that. The opportunity may never come back to you again, or you get into a point where you're continuously making it perfect and you never actually get the job done. So I guess that's one real big piece of advice that stuck with me in establishing Ellison Property is...
And you've done it well too with your brother. You formed a team.
All my boxes ticked and everything set up, but Ellison Property wouldn't exist until probably another 10 or 15 years time. But it's more... opportunity came, let's do it, let's get it done, and then work out how to do it. Is it going? We have, yeah. And that a big part of working out how it is the how to get things done is it's the teamwork around us that's helped us to get there, and they've appreciated that. Although we know how to build, we know how to develop property, but setting up an own business, that's something new, and that's where their support and they appreciate we're in that space at the moment, and they're helping us along. So it's a good team.
Drawing on the advice from Richard Branson, Fayyad thinks about what he would tell his younger self if he could go back in time.
You don't need to make sure everything is perfect and have everything 100, if not 110% right before you go and embark on something. If it's almost there, get it, just grab it, do it, and then it'll work itself out. And that's one thing that I think I've only really embraced in the last couple of years, and if I'd done it earlier, I think it'd be a lot better.
I asked Fayyad where he sees himself and the company in 5 years' time.
The vision that I have and where I, God willing, take us there is I'd like to see pretty much what we do at the moment, but on a larger scale. So right now we have X amount of projects under our management. I'd like to see a combination of family projects growing and also having third-party developers who don't quite have the functionality of developing a building. They may just be landowners coming on board, coming on our journey and providing that service for them. So I guess one, an expansion of what we're doing now, two, having some more landowners coming in on the journey, enjoying our service so we can develop their buildings. And three, like I mentioned earlier, I really like to get into the hotel space. So I don't know, 5 years may be a bit too early, but maybe 10 years.
10 years sounds like a good time frame. What would it take to actually build a hotel? I've never delved into that space to have a look, but what actually would you need?
I think the building side, we've got that covered. It's more about the operational and making sure that the numbers stack up, to get the right mix, where to put the hotel, how many beds you need, we've spoken to a lot of hotel operators in the past that wanting to, as I mentioned earlier, potentially rent our buildings. So we build the shell for them, they come in with their builders, they'll fit out to make it look like a hotel, and then they'll operate it. So in talking with them, there's a lot of things that I couldn't quite understand. Like I understand how to build the thing for them and how to sell the structure to them, but what makes their business profitable, that's something that I'd like to spend the next few years trying to understand, and then work out if I've got that sorted, can I then go and delve into that side of things as well. So
it's a completely different world out there.
It is different. It's totally different. It's a different role. And like I mentioned before, I don't want to pretend I know it just because I've built a couple of structures before and had hotel operators in and around me. I don't pretend that I am a hotel operator. I have built hotels, but I like to know that, I guess, the point two and point three of that journey I was explaining earlier before I set foot into that. So, yeah. But it's definitely on my radar.
So how much, if any, of his success is determined by luck?
I think luck is... Luck's a funny word in property development, I guess. Some people say you're lucky that your apartment doubled in price in 5 years, or you're lucky that you got a good deal on your apartment. But that would be put down to skill as well, as in buying at the right time, knowing the market, working out what's about to boom, what train station's just about to be built, so you know to buy an apartment there. So by the time it's built, it's then. So depends the way you look at it in property. People who, I guess, don't acknowledge that you need to know a few things or be smart about the property space will call it luck, because it's very hard to differentiate. It's not like you can prove why your apartment or your home increased in value. You can't prove it, but you just knew it was the right time to buy before it went up in price. So I guess because you can't prove it, someone might say, well, it's luck, and you kind of have to just shrug it and say, well, yeah, it has to be, it's got to be luck, because you can't really explain it. And I guess that's what I've found. A lot of people in the space, they either talk about how did you know that was going to happen in that area to buy that parcel of land, or do you get other people who say, you're so lucky that you bought that land and happened to be a train station or a train or like a light rail stop is going to happen right out your doorstep. You know, so people, it depends how you look at it, you know, so...
Thank you to Fayyad Fayyad, our guest on this episode of Property Investory. Do you find yourself stressed out not knowing how or where to find the best property deals? Or what the best strategy is to build a wealth-generating portfolio? Well, Dragan Dominski can help you, while you save time and money. With about 2 decades of experience as an investor and expert buyer's agent, he finds positively geared properties with development potentials and secures and negotiates off-market deals for his clients. Now, he's offering you a no-obligation 45-minute strategy call to get you started. Just simply text the code BAA with your name and email address to 0405 105 074 to get your no-obligation free 45-minute strategy call.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com. The number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.